The following program is sponsored by Tabes Tech LLC. This is Pro Business Colorado with your host, Dave Tabor, on KDMT, Denver's Money Talk, 1690 AM.
All right. Welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor, Denver's Money Talk, 1690. The number to join the show is 303-632-4160. I didn't even want to go to break. Kelly made me do it. But Andy and I were talking. Andy Boyne from Dovetail Solutions. Welcome back, Andy.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being here. We were talking. We were having a great conversation about crisis communications and how business owners can get out in front. I want to mention, though, before we dive right in, I want to give a couple of notes about what's coming up on the show. Later today, we've got Michael Hronica, who is the CEO of MicroStar Logistics. And if you're interested in the microbrewery business, you'll want to hear this part of the conversation, because Michael's company is one that enables microbrewers to expand their distribution and really become successful outside of their own, you know, small boundaries. And next week, we've got a neat show, too. We've got the owners of Heating and Plumbing Engineers, Kelly and Bill Eustace, who have grown a company to up to 300 employees now. They're going to talk about how they've built their business and how they retain and attract talented people. Also joining us next week is Ed Sealover, who is a well-known, well-respected writer for the Denver Business Journal. He's going to be doing now regular monthly updates on some of the most interesting stories that he's written, some of the most interesting people he's met, and also trends that he's seeing in the Denver and Colorado business area. So tune in next week, every Saturday, 8 to 10 a.m., on Denver's Money Talk, 1690. Again, the number to call in is 303-632-4160. And I want to mention, too, before we get too far into this hour, that KDMT has a really, really neat program coming up. It's LeaderCast 2016, America's largest one-day leadership event. And at this, there'll be some tremendous speakers. Apple's co-founder Steve Wozniak will be there. I just watched the movie. Did you see the movie, Steve Jobs?
I did.
And so I'd want to ask Steve Wozniak, is this really, you know, how
right.
this went down? And of
is
course,
it accurate?
Yeah,
right.
I know. Also, there'll be championship football coach Nick Saban, leadership expert Dr. Henry Cloud, a lot of other guests. And there'll be also an appearance by the Denver Money Talk 1690 morning show. Alex and Angel, the experienced pros, will be on. LeaderCast 2016 is Friday, May 6th at the PPA Event Center in Denver. Tickets are available and so forth. You can go to Denver Money Talk 1690.com and click on local events button. I also wanted to let listeners know that there's now an app for Money Talk 1690. You can use the app to listen to Money Talk 1690 anywhere, anytime. You can download it to your smartphone, of course, at the App Store or Google Play. So back to our show. That head that just bumped a mic. Thanks, Michael. Michael's joined us, and I said, you know, it's going to be easier to have you join us during now versus during the short break, and maybe I was wrong, but that's okay. But we'll have Michael on in a little while. But I want to go back to Andy and this notion of crisis communications and what can small, especially if you're a small business owner,
sure.
were mentioning Chipotle and how it, you know, the news was just like raging instantly.
Yep.
How can a small business owner, what should they think about crisis communication?
Sure. The first thing that I think is most important about any company that's susceptible to a potential public crisis is put together a plan, whether it be a 2 or 3 page plan that says, here are the 4 or 5 things we're going to do. If this ever happens,
and probably who we're going to call.
Who we're going to call, but also, you know, have an amalgamation of consensus around your employees, around what happens when there is a crisis, because employees tend to want to take care of the company and want to take care of themselves, and they'll do things sometimes that aren't in the best interest of the company or the brand.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a plan in place that makes some sense, everybody knows what to do. And those aren't very expensive to do. They're very relevant to today's business world. And as we talked about earlier, the media is very interested in telling the story. That's their job.
Mm-hmm.
Their job is to go out and make sure that they're telling the news. And if you've got a plan in place to say, here's A, B, C, and D of what we're going to do if we find ourselves in a crisis, it makes it a ton easier, Dave. And the other thing it does is it really sort of puts together an official script of who's going to do what and who's mm-hmm. going to say what when when that happens.
I would think during the formulation of that there's a side benefit for small businesses and for small business owners. I mean, you're going to have to do an effective crisis communication plan. You're going to have to reiterate what are our core values, what are we about, what's our mission, what's our voice. You know, these are things that aren't just useful for a crisis communication.
That's
plan, right.
That's so, exactly right.
Yeah. Backing up a little bit, because we dove right in with you and Mike Shaw before, I wanted to make sure we get a chance to talk about, you know, your core business, this whole notion of strategic community investment. You explain that?
Sure. So we're a public relations firm. It's a little different than another down the street, really, in a couple of ways. One is that we talk about investing in your community and therefore investing in relationships. And I'm not talking about investing money. I'm talking about investing time, intellect, your relationship capacity, perhaps what you can mutually benefit from. There's really 4 points to our philosophy. One is obviously to be remembered, you have to show up. You have to be present in the community. You can't just do business transactionally and expect those relationships to grow. Two is that your best resource is your community. It's not necessarily what you think of as here are our top 10 targets for selling our product. It has to do more with your relationship. Make that a core, make the community the core part of your business. The third is that an effective marketplace makes a good brand. So it takes relationships and it takes good ones, ones that you can trust, ones that you can rely on. I'm going to go back to your previous guest. Mike Shaw has done that. Mike Shaw has done that. He's built relationships with folks that only buy from him. And the fourth is the most valuable commodities you have as a company in this order is your time and your money. But your time is number one. Mm-hmm. And so how you allocate your time and your resources around time can be, and we believe, are the most effective way in a public relations communication strategy to build business.
You know, this notion of time and money is one that I often say people these days have more money than time. Even when they say they don't have any cash, I would argue that they have more cash than money.
And I would agree.
Or more than time. And
I would agree.
I wanted to back up because you mentioned something about being a resource in community. You got to invest. You got to put time into the community. I think that's the biggest challenge, especially for small business, is that, one, they don't have that much. But the other is that as people just start being involved in the community, that's what they are. They're just involved. It's not very strategic.
Sure.
And how does that play out? Because just doing stuff, just coaching soccer, doesn't really lead to outcomes that help, I guess, your business and community.
That's true. And I tell you, you'll be surprised at how many soccer coaches probably get some business on the soccer field done.
Yeah. But
I point out to you also, our first word is strategic. It's important when we tell our clients, it's also as important to find out where you're not very valuable in terms of time. So where things are most important for you and where that time is spent and where it's not spent is important. But those relationships and how you strategically find and build those relationships are critical to your ROI, your return on investment, and your company.
I'm going to ask you some specific questions about that when we come back. This is Dave Tabor on Pro Business Colorado, Denver's Money Talk 1690. You can call 303-632-4160. We'll be right back.
Just do it every way. Denver's Money Talk, 1690 AM.
American Furniture Warehouse offers the lowest prices in town and is the best place to shop for furniture. I know. My fireplace room has two AFW leather love seats that look great and add wonderful warmth to the room. Like I did, you can shop their beautifully displayed showrooms without pressure, then take it home today or have it delivered by their professional delivery team. I did that and really enjoyed the experience. American Furniture Warehouse strives to offer their customers the latest in fashion at the best possible pricing. American Furniture Warehouse scours the world for the lowest prices and works hard to get the best deals. Because they buy in volume, they can pass along those prices straight to their customers. American Furniture Warehouse believes there's nothing wrong with giving their customers a bargain, so no negotiating prices. You get the lowest prices every time. American Furniture strives to satisfy their customers and do it right the first time. They make sure their customers are informed and pleased with every purchase. Live better for less at American Furniture Warehouse. For more information or to shop online, visit AFWOnline.com. Again, that's AFWOnline.com.
Community Banks of Colorado is proud to sponsor Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor because they too believe that everyone has a business in them. At Community Banks of Colorado, they bank with common sense. That means straight talk, personal attention, and sensible, clear directions from real people. Community Bank small business clients may be anything from farmers to bakers to medical professionals, but the one thing they all have in common is that they are determined to find the right resources they need to help their customers reach their full business potential. They offer common sense solutions that never make you feel small, no matter
matter your size, and put all those big box banking problems behind you. Bottom line, small businesses are valued at community banks. To them, it's just common sense that the more you know about your customer, the better you can serve them. For more information, contact Brian Parisis at 720-872-4987. That's 720-872-4987. Or stop by one of Community Bank's many locations throughout Colorado. Community Banks of Colorado is a division of NBH Bank, member FDIC.
We now return to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on KDMT, Denver's Money Talk, 1690 AM.
All right, welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on Denver's Money Talk 1690 every Saturday morning from 8 to 10. If you want to join the conversation, 303-632-4160, 303-632-4160. And I'm joined now in the studio with Andy Boyan, who is with Dovetail Solutions. We've been talking about everything from, well, strategic community involvement for business and also crisis communications. Andy, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, also in the studio with me now, and we're going to speak more with in a little while, is Michael Hronica. Michael's with MicroStar Keg Logistics Company, and Mike's the CEO there. And that's a, you want to explain that company real quick? And
sure. You know, MicroStar is meant to provide growth opportunities to craft brewers by ensuring they get their beer to market. You know, as you think about the challenges that a craft brewer would have, you know, making good beer is not one of them.
Yeah.
Those guys
are
fantastic when it comes to making good beer. The challenge for them is around logistics. And what we serve the craft brewer community to do is to just put that great beer in a keg and then send it somewhere.
Yeah.
And no matter where it goes, they don't have to think about it. Let us figure that out.
Well, very good. Thanks for joining us today. And we're going to hold off on the beer questions till a little later in the show. But as we talk with Andy and Michael, we'll see where there's some crossover and so forth. Andy, I want to continue the conversation with about crisis communications. And recently, sure. I guess this notion of Colorado being on the scene, we're increasingly familiar with Colorado having national presence around microbrewing, right? But around this notion of IT, it's so exciting to see Colorado in the mainstream. But you and I were talking at the break about this client of yours and mm-hmm. and this Colorado being on the national scene around Hillary Clinton's emails.
Sure.
And how Colorado, by some strange coincidence, and maybe it's not a coincidence, is at the center of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. The company is an IT professional service company. What they do really is they protect the data that's inside a server. And if you follow the story at all, and a lot of Americans have followed the story, but there have been some crazy innuendos and insinuations that, you know, there were servers in bathrooms, and there were servers in closets, and there were servers, you know, all of that is noise. None of that was true. None of that was even close to accurate. And so what the IT company did was hire us to say, will you just actually, to the extent to which we can, tell the facts, which we did. And the story came out and got was cleared up pretty quickly. But it's interesting, innuendo and insinuation by not just the media, but those that want to fuel the fire for whatever reason were prevalent here.
And tons of politics came to
play. Tons
of
politics, I mean, she's a candidate for president of the United States, and so there was a lot of – and there's a lot of opinion about what she did and didn't do.
With the email and email servers.
That's right.
So your client – really was simply hosting, right? Or
that's exactly right. I mean, and the server was never in Colorado. It actually was out on the East Coast, right near where she operated and near some other obviously data sensitive material was, and was always protected. So it's a fairly simple story, fairly straightforward story. But as you said, Dave, you know, the familiarity with her was specifically with Secretary Clinton, but also with the nature of the story being so politicized in the presidential campaign year just made it for such a big deal.
Yeah, it's I don't know. To me, it's exciting that if there's going to be a big story like that, you know, let me ask you this question. Was that the idea that it was a Colorado company that was pulled into this melee unfairly? Is that good for Colorado's IT reputation?
Sure. I'd have to say yes. I mean, in that situation, what it showed was not only is my client someone with whom they know, you know, full of experts that know exactly what they're doing, but it shows Colorado as, you know, we have the smartest workforce in the nation or among the smartest workforce in the nation, one of the lowest unemployment rates in the nation, and the most desirable place to live. So how else can that be for Colorado but a great story to say, we're full of opportunity here. One of our companies happens to be on the national stage because of this issue with the secretary, but there are dozens and dozens of companies that are really, really doing good work here and really do a good job. And I think what's interesting about Colorado is that we should be out telling our story even more, because when we tell it, we win.
Yeah. I want to talk about how we tell our story, and not just and from a private business sector standpoint, because I saw this article, and we're talking about politics a little bit, and with the Hillary Clinton thing and all that. So I see this article in the Denver Post, the headline, "Trump Aides Reassure Top Republican Leaders." But what caught my attention is Trump's newly hired senior – I'm reading from the article – Trump's newly hired senior aide, Paul Manafort, made the case to Republican National Committee members that Trump has two personalities, one in private and one on stage. When he's on stage, he's talking about the kind of things he's talking about on the stump. He's protecting an image that's for that or for that purpose. Well, that sounds kind of bogus to me. I mean, how if we're speaking in the public for whatever reason, shouldn't we have integrity to be the same person all the time?
Absolutely. I mean, this business is whether it's politics, of which we're involved with as well, or you know, public relations in general. You always come back grounded to integrity, trust, and honesty. If those things, three things, are in place, you win every time. And in a story, in a crisis situation, if you're able to tell those three things and make sure those three things are centered around the core, that's what's best. And so in the article, and I read the same article you did about –
Isn't that strange to
you? Yeah, it is strange. And what marks that strange is, to me as well, is Mr. Trump is first and foremost someone with whom we associate real estate and entertainment. Mm-hmm. And so never would we have, as an American culture 2 years ago, even thought of Donald Trump as being a serious candidate for president. But now, folks, and Paul Manafort is actually a very well-respected Republican strategist nationally.
So I'm criticizing someone way smarter than me?
No, that's not true. No, I'd say you two are on equal footing. But what I will tell you is that Mr. Trump is now transforming himself into being taken more seriously. And that's a very difficult thing to do in communications. Mm. If you're known as an entertainer, and you're known as someone with whom we associate entertainment, trying to run for a serious, very serious job like commander in chief, leader of the free world, it's a very difficult chasm to cross. And in that regard, I think he's trying to do that to the best of his ability, and he's struggling a bit with that.
Well, it sounds like anyone in your assessment would struggle with
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really the case. Yeah. And even in the case of reputation, when you look at reputation management too, taking what people think of you and transforming it into something new is a very difficult process as well.
I want to use that as a jumping off point to talk sort of about company voice and about how we use a consistent company voice, maybe even through the kinds of employees that we have and the kinds of work that they do in the community. First, I want to remind listeners that this is Denver's Money Talk 1690, and you're listening to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. If you'd like to call and ask questions of Andy Boyan or now Michael Hironica from MicroStar Keg, that number is 303-632-4160. I want to play a clip. This is from Zappos. It's from an employee interview at Zappos. And I want to ask both of you what your take is on it. Go ahead, 29, please.
So it doesn't involve me being at work, but I wowed because I went to the store yesterday to get ice for a party we had, and there was two 20s sitting in the cash register dispenser, like someone had gotten cash and not taken it. And a part of me was like, I could take this, and nobody would know. And then the other part of me was like, that would never be okay, and I'm going to wow the person who got this cash and forgot it, and I'm going to give it to the cash register, and I'm going to be honest. And I'm not saying before Zappos I would have taken it, but I will say at Zappos, when you leave here and when you work here, you do become a better person just because of the core values, because of the culture, because of the directors and the leadership. And it does take you outside of the company, and you do talk about the company a lot, and you think about things before you do them. And that's what I thought.
You know, that I think that's a brilliant interview, because you got an employee talking about taking their company values and culture out into the community beyond the company. What's your take? Go ahead, Andy. Go ahead.
Let me give you a quick example. I think that's a fantastic clip you made. Let me give you the example of the Denver Broncos, and we've done a little bit of work with the Broncos over the years. But you know, one of the things that is in every Broncos player's contract is a character clause. That they maintain themselves as good gentlemen in the community. And that's something that was instituted long before John Elway. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, I've known John a long time. And even in the institution of John Elway leading the Broncos, it's even more fervent. So several weeks ago, we covered a Brock Osweiler incident in Scottsdale, Arizona, with a pizza situation at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I remember in the process of dealing with that crisis, thinking about the things that John Elway talks about to his players all the time is your character. And then I quickly move over to Peyton Manning, whom I think we can all agree is someone with whom we have great respect and has held himself in high regard. And we have as well with regard to character. And just like that clip from Zappos, one of the best things you can do as an employee is act with character and integrity. It's such an important aspect of how things are and how people view you publicly, even as public as the Denver Broncos, which I think is just an incredible part of the contract for them.
Hey, that's a great story. And Michael, you had some comments on that too, but there's actually a caller waiting to talk to Michael. Sean is on the phone, and I don't know, maybe he wants to talk beer right now on a Saturday morning. Sean, go ahead. You're on.
Hey, this is Sean Heiner. I've got a small microbrewery in Washington State, in Longview, Washington, and I'm from Olympia, Washington. Who am I talking to?
Michael Hironica, the CEO of MicroStar.
No, I know who Michael is.
Well, this is Dave Tabor. Is it?
Ah, cool. Right on. Okay, so I guess my number one question is, you see a lot of brewers. We're all basically the joke in the industry. You can walk up to somebody that you don't even know and ask them, how's your expansion going, right? And they'll tell you all of the trials and tribulations that they're dealing with and expanding their breweries, large and small. So mine's about 3.5 barrels, and I'm curious, based on what you see, what advice do you think most of us, you know, guys who are really just trying to grow and do the best they can, what's the best advice that you can give us?
Well, I think it all starts, it's funny, it's a segue from the conversation that we just had here. I think it begins with character and integrity. And I believe that the reason that the craft beer movement has been as successful as it's been is because people really get to know, once they build that brewery, their community. They get to know the folks in the neighborhood. The folks in the neighborhood know the people that are brewing that beer, and they like them. And they want to spend time with them. And I always ask folks, what do you think is driving craft beer? Most people would guess the taste of the beer. I would contend that that's secondary. People are driving craft beer.
So people are drinking beer made by people they like and know.
Bingo. Wow. So folks want to be with people that they like. Craft brewers are very approachable. You know, they allow you to sit down in a comfortable environment and try new tastes, try things that you have not before felt comfortable with. And that's why I think the craft beer community has been so successful. And I would say that any new brewer needs to really dive into their local community and ensure that they are in touch with them.
Well, that makes for a bit of a dilemma then, because that works until you want to grow outside of your local community. Then what?
Well, I think what you need to do is ensure that you've got an image and a group of folks that are strong supporters, because ultimately growth needs to be managed. You can't just all of a sudden say, hey, here I am in San Diego brewing a great beer, and I'm going to send it up to North Dakota and just expect it to be accepted. Mm-hmm. All of it is like building any other kind of brand, you know, but the brand ends up beginning with the people.
Sean, did you have a follow-on to that?
Well, definitely, and I think one of the challenges that we've seen is we've grown to the size where we can hire our first employee, right? So we started to move some of the tap room operations over to that employee, Audrey, who's great. But we immediately, when we did that, we started to get our regulars howling about what you just talked about, right? So we started to be able to focus some more on some operations and some manufacturing type stuff, and we're trying to do that balancing act where we're not getting our regular customers just howling because we're not running the tap room.
Hey, Sean, stick around. We're going to a break, but Michael's going to come back and answer that question for you when we get back. This is Dave Tabor on Pro Business Colorado. Every Saturday morning from 8 to 10, call and join the show, 303-632-4160. We'll be right back after this.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. The search continues for a suspect or suspects in the case of the murder of 8 family members in rural Ohio. Officials say at this point they don't know who carried out the murders. They're warning family members, though, to beware, as it was only members of a certain family who were targeted, 8 killed in 4 different locations. Police in Alabama are investigating a shooting at a nightclub that left three people dead. WSFA reports that the shooting happened early today at a club in Auburn. German Chancellor Angela Merkel and top European Union officials have arrived near Turkey's border with Syria. It's all part of the bid to bolster a migration deal with Turkey. President Obama says the deal between the European Union and Turkey takes a step toward what he calls fairer sharing of the job of housing refugees. He spoke to young people today at a town hall meeting in West London. More details at srnnews.com.
Business never takes a break, neither do we. So, take Denver's Money Talk 1690 AM with you with our brand new mobile app. Stay up to the minute with breaking news, market strategies, current trends, and more wherever you are. With live streaming, listen to your favorite Money Talk shows whenever you want, on demand. It's like a personal advisor in your pocket. Do something today that your future self will thank you for. Download the brand new Money Talk app on iTunes or the Google Play Store or at MoneyTalk1690.com. Free enterprise, entrepreneurship, and collaboration. The Opportunity Coalition was founded by Brian Watson to encourage and facilitate these principles. The goal of Opportunity Coalition is to create opportunity, quality employment, and connect local business leaders with concerned citizens. The Opportunity Coalition strives to provide the platform, resources, and connections needed to help people succeed. Every month, Opportunity Coalition brings in speakers from the media, politics, business, and nonprofits to discuss the important issues facing Colorado by creating a place of discussion and exchange of ideas. They connect and strengthen the business community. Past speakers have included American Furniture Warehouse CEO Jake Jabs, former U.S. Representative Bob Schaefer, and President Tom Shane of Shane Company. With exciting and innovative speakers each month, Opportunity Coalition draws some of Colorado's most innovative and driven leaders. To learn more about Opportunity Coalition or to sign up to attend their monthly events, please visit opportunitycoalition.com. North Star Commercial Partners is a unique Denver-based real estate company that specializes in buying vacant and distressed properties and placing them back into productivity. North Star creates jobs and opportunities here in Colorado and across the U.S. through the revitalization of industrial office and retail spaces. By doing so, they help others realize the potential of their own companies. North Star values the opportunity to work hand-in-hand with innovators and business leaders to turn ideas into reality through creative real estate solutions. North Star's team connects profession with a passion to help others and serve the community. Founder and CEO Brian Watson encourages fellow entrepreneurs and business people in Colorado to do well by doing good. Learn more about the business and community work of North Star at northstarcommercialpartners.com and brianwatson.us. North Star Commercial Partners, creating opportunity, empowering people, strengthening communities. Community Banks of Colorado is proud to sponsor Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor because they, too, believe that everyone has a business in them. Community Banks of Colorado sees your small business's big potential. They offer common-sense solutions that never make you feel small, no matter your business's size, and put all those big-box banking problems behind you. Bottom line, small businesses are valued at Community Banks. For more information, contact Brian Parisis at 720-872-4987 or stop by one of Community Bank's many locations throughout Colorado. Now, back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on KDMT, Denver's Money Talk, 1690 AM.
All right, welcome back. I'm Dave Tabor on Pro Business Colorado, Denver's Money Talk, 1690. If you'd like to join the show, 303-632-4160. And we're visiting with Michael Hironico, who's the CEO of MicroStar Logistics. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you, Dave.
And Sean, thanks for sticking around. We were talking about, Sean's our caller from Washington, and we're talking about this notion of growth and building community as a tool for growth. And Sean, you still with us?
Yeah, I was just listening to some of the advertisers.
All right, very good. So, Michael, we were talking about – I asked the question about, okay, if the way to build a microbrewery brand is to have a community of followers, the people who are actually in your tap room liking you, and then how do you grow that?
Yeah, what you'll find is that growth and community engagement are not mutually exclusive. It's really how you manage and handle that. And so, Sean, when you look at your business, the thing that I would encourage you to do is to remain really focused on your core. And what is your core? It is brewing great beer and engaging people. And so when you think of it that way, you need to ensure that you're focusing your organization on that mission, on that message to the market. and allow other folks that are logistics experts to manage some of the other complicated aspects of the business that you just described. You know, I think that ultimately the reason MicroStar was created is for that very reason. You know, we as a company allow the brewers to focus on their core. We allow them to continue engaging the community, to continue to think about market expansion, geographic expansion, and do that via engagement in other markets. Mm-hmm. And it allows them to free themselves of all of the activity associated with, you know, my gosh, how do I source these kegs? How do I hire folks them? How do I manage logistics?
Well, if you're having great success in a single location tap room where you're brewing and serving and your customers like you, you're all friends and everything, how do you leverage that, or how do you expand that into if you're shipping a keg to someplace 100 miles away or 1,000 miles away, how do they feel that love and that relationship?
You know, we're living in such an interconnected world nowadays. You know, there are folks in the craft beer, in the beer world, that spend a lot of time reviewing different types of beers mm-hmm. on the Internet. And so the Internet allows people to see a beer in Maine. You know, Maine Beer, for example, one of my favorite beer companies. These guys make a fantastic beer, and their beer is sought after whenever it is available somewhere else. The reason is because people see that folks are crazy about it, mm-hmm. and they want to try to get it.
Is it like the old Coors Light 30 or 40 years ago, right? Hey, Sean, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Sean.
You know, as I think about that, too, I think, you know, can social media build, can it be used effectively to build this, maybe not the same kind of relationship that you have with somebody across a bar, but can it be used to build a relationship with consumers in a broader geographical area?
There is no doubt. You know, folks first become aware of people often through social media. You know, folks will see and hear a buzz in a local community. It's, you know, craft beer is a lot like rock music. You know, people will hear about a band that is playing in someone's small bar in a town, and next thing you know, they are spreading far and wide.
Yeah.
Craft beer has the same opportunity.
That's hopeful, I would think, for people like Sean, who are building a business and want to expand at some point.
I believe it is,
yeah.
Because it's authentic.
Yeah. Well, talk about that, because authentic really is, and I wish, you know, now Andy's not here anymore, Andy from Dovetail Solutions, but authenticity is so important in voice, right?
You know, if I could just tell you a quick story. When you look at the beer industry here in the United States, back in 1870, there were a little over 4,000 brewers. And then over that course of time, because of prohibition and industrialization and efficiency
mm-hmm.
focus,
yeah.
in 1980, it went down to like 90 brewers. And what happened? The brewers were brewing, you know, essentially the same beer. And someone
big batch
beer, you know, a lot of lager. And what happened is you have people in craft that have a passion for this high flavor, high impact beer. And they started creating these things in these small markets. And people would hear the term craft and not understand it. And from that low in 1980 of about 90 brewers, we're back up to about 4,300. And the reason for that is because of what I just mentioned. It is because people engaged their local community. They made a beer that folks loved, and that word spread, and these crafts that began in small towns have now become big businesses. You know, for example, you're looking at over 400,000 jobs now from a very tiny industry. You're putting over $50 billion into the U.S. economy, and that is from essentially zero 30 years ago.
I want to talk about your background, how you got into this business, and also the thing that I find most intriguing is that your business seems to have exploded because you're basically fixing a painful problem, right? So what's the painful problem you're fixing? And then let's talk about, you know, how you got into this whole thing.
Yeah, you know, we strive to be an operating partner for our brewers. You know, we've got 500 brewers today. And, you know, all of these brewers have encountered the same issue that Sean described. You know, they are folks who started because they're passionate about beer.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, as the community starts wanting more of it, they realize it becomes a big business real fast.
Yeah. And expensive, right? I mean, it's one thing to build a local facility, mm-hmm. right? Then it gets hard.
That is exactly right. And when you look at capital, you know, no matter what business you're in, capital matters.
Yeah.
And the most expensive thing for a brewer is building their brewery. The second most expensive thing is building a float of kegs. Mm-hmm. And when you think of every keg as an asset, you know, each one of these things, $150 floating around in the U.S. in this incredibly complex supply chain. If you're a brewer, you can't afford to lose 1,000 of them every 6 months. You know, that is a major cost impact.
I mean, that would be a fantasy for some brewers, right, to have 1,000 kegs out there running around, right? But
right.
Losing them is not.
That's correct.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
So that's what's so intriguing about to me about your business, because your business is exploding. I mean, you're really growing fast. I noticed that you've got great clients that we recognize, Avery Brewing Company, Oscar Blues, Great Divide. You mentioned some others, but I only care about the Colorado ones. but you know, it shows that when you solve in a very tight niche, you solve a really painful problem, mm-hmm. your business can thrive, right?
And how that happens, you know, you were talking about what employees need to do. What employees need to do is stay close to the customer. You know, we believe, you know, you tell people what matters and you measure it. And our focus is customer first, always. Why? Because if you are really committed to the customer, you learn about them. You understand what their needs are.
You drink beer with them.
You drink beer with them. You understand what they need. And it allows you to build your business around that, because without a top line, which is driven by the customer, there is no bottom line.
Yeah, yeah. I'm interested, too. I mean, you and I met years ago when you were the CEO of Ball Corporation, and you made a decision to leave a large public company to run a small upstart, right? What was behind that thinking?
Well, I was president of the Americas at Ball. And at Ball, you know, they were the largest producer of aluminum beverage cans in the world. And, you know, we had many folks that we dealt with, the Pepsis, the Cokes, the Anheuser-Busches, you know, the Miller Coors, mm-hmm. were really the preponderance of their business. And, you know, we started, Ball really began in the can world, you know, initiating cans into the craft beer marketplace by putting into place, you know, some strategies that allowed them to have access to cans, which previously they did not. And so I really became interested in craft beer at that time.
As you were wanting to move the cans into that market. And many people don't realize that canned beer, it's a transition that's happening, right? Because actually cans are quite nice to craft beer, right?
I always say, look, I liked it in a can. I love it in a keg.
Yeah, well, there you go.
And so I think the bottom line is I began meeting people. It's funny how that works, because you meet the folks in craft beer and you just begin to feel the vibe. I mean, mm-hmm. people in craft are what has made America great. They're entrepreneurs. They're people that are following a passion. They believe in what they're doing. And when you're around that, it's fun. And when I had the opportunity to dive headlong into craft beer, I took that opportunity.
Yeah. Were you just ready for a change?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, it was a multi-billion dollar business that I was running, and you begin kind of separating yourself from what made, you know, you learn, you know, as you grow.
Yeah.
And I began realizing that what I enjoyed was growing businesses and being heavily involved with people and in the operation.
Yeah, you know, one of the things you told me when we talked shortly after you got into the business, you were almost giddy, saying that, you know, you'd always hoped to have a business, to run a business where you could have whatever kind of culture you wanted to have. And you weren't talking about beer culture, you were talking about people culture. And I want to talk about that when we come back and what you've done to build exactly the culture you want. And this is Pro Business Colorado with me, Dave Tabor. And if you want to join us, 303-632-4160. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Dave Tabor for American Furniture Warehouse. I'm a big fan of AFW. I'm a fan because I've gotten to know them well, really well. Jake has built AFW to be a company all of us in Colorado can be proud of. He started it by buying out a dying little store and turned it into Colorado's largest family-owned company with thousands of employees and tens of thousands of customers. And guess what? He's done it the old-fashioned way, by treating customers and employees right. I've seen how Jake operates. Once, when a worker slipped in a wet shipping bay, Jake invested hundreds of thousands of dollars to install better weatherproofing collars around all the shipping doors so it wouldn't happen again. AFW has its own physical therapy center so that workers can stay healthy, and if someone does get hurt, he or she can be treated immediately by qualified professionals. AFW drivers are incentivized to deliver furniture on time and without damage, and when they do, they earn a lot more than typical drivers.
All that and great products at low prices. AFW runs a tremendous business we can all be proud of. I hope you'll shop there as I do.
American Furniture Warehouse offers the lowest prices in town and is the best place to shop for furniture. I know. My fireplace room has two AFW leather love seats that look great and add wonderful warmth to the room. Like I did, you can shop their beautifully displayed showrooms without pressure, then take it home today or have it delivered by their professional delivery team. I did that and really enjoyed the experience. American Furniture Warehouse strives to offer their customers the latest in fashion at the best possible pricing. American Furniture Warehouse scours the world for the lowest prices and works hard to get the best deals. Because they buy in volume, they can pass along those prices straight to their customers. American Furniture Warehouse believes there's nothing wrong with giving their customers a bargain, so no negotiating prices. You get the lowest prices every time. American Furniture strives to satisfy their customers and do it right the first time. They make sure their customers are informed and pleased with every purchase. Live better for less at American Furniture Warehouse. For more information or to shop online, visit AFWOnline.com. Again, that's AFWOnline.com.
We now return to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on KDMT, Denver's Money Talk, 1690 AM.
Hey, welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on Denver's Money Talk 1690. You can join the show at 303-632-4160. We're speaking with Michael Hironica, the CEO of MicroStar Logistics. I always want to call it MicroStar Keg because that's really what you do. But anyway, thanks for being here with us.
Of course.
Michael and I, and by the way, thanks to Kelly in the booth. Kelly was just saying how much he's enjoying listening to Michael. I think it's because Kelly likes beer. He says he just thinks he's a great guest. But anyway, I want to before we move on, right into the show and talking with Michael about culture, I want to make sure I thank our great sponsors, North Star Commercial Partners, Community Banks of Colorado, and American Furniture Warehouse. They're all the primary sponsors of this show, Pro Business Colorado, because they want to support the show, and mostly, I think, because they support Colorado business people, Colorado small business, and certainly Colorado entrepreneurism, and I appreciate them very much. What a beautiful day if you're out there driving around, up to 75 degrees today. It's beautiful out, and here I am in the studio, but I'll be out there soon. This is the show for people who love the dynamic world of small business, entrepreneurship, and innovation. It's true. Everyone has a business in them. And along those lines, Michael was telling us how he left a very large corporation and moved to MicroStar Keg. And because you wanted to create, or at least you always dreamed of creating a company where you control the culture. So tell us about your culture and what you did to get there.
Yeah, I think there are some folks that begin hiring employees based on competency. And, you know, competency to me is an important aspect. It is something that is table stakes. You know, you expect a company you're dealing with to be competent and good and effective. I personally believe that when a company stops at competency, they are failing themselves and they're failing their customer. You know, we literally interview people for competency. We then put those highly competent folks into a single pile. There isn't a person at MicroStar that will be hired without going out to a bar, having drinks with the team, and talking socially. And the reason is we believe that it's important to be able to interact with others. We believe it is critical that someone be liked, because people, when it all boils down, no matter how much technology exists in this world, no matter how much people need things done, they want to do business with people they like.
Yeah.
And I think creating a culture of folks that all understand that interpersonal matters and that you need to be helpful and you need to really think about the customer before you start providing solutions.
Yeah.
You know, that all begins with the individual and whether or not that person is wired to interpersonally understand
that. Let me dig deeper in that, because it's one thing to know that they all like each other.
Mm-hmm.
What attributes and qualities of character are you looking for? It's nice to have people that like to drink beer and laugh.
Oh, yeah.
There's more to it than that, right? Oh. What attributes are you really looking for?
Yeah, I think just to be clear, when we put folks through an interview process, they are going through filters of all of those competencies and leadership skills. We have a lot of folks that played sports either in high school or college, a lot of folks that were ex-military officers. Mm. And, you know, the reason that that's important is they're people that understand leadership. They're people that understand stick-to-itiveness. They're optimistic. Generally, they understand that there have been times that they've won in the face of incredible adversity. Mm-hmm. And I think it is important for someone to sit in front of a customer who lays a challenge out and have that person say, how can we solve this? A great example of what's happening today. craft brewers have done a great job of growing in the U.S., right? Mm-hmm. There's a real challenge now with efficiently getting their beer to export markets. You know, and I can tell you we're going to solve that. And it is something that has not been solved before. We are actively working on things that are going to create an environment where people can efficiently move this highly sought-after beer into other markets, which will open a lot of growth opportunities.
Well, sure will. And that's an interesting challenge because I would think other countries are fairly protective of that particular market,
mm-hmm.
right?
Absolutely. And I always say, look, in the U.S., craft is now 12% of the market, and they're competing against domestic producers and imports.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not done with culture yet. I'm still I still want to know more. I want to have a sense for what if I walked into your offices and your building and all that, what the culture, how I would feel about your culture and how I would define your culture.
Sure. And I think ultimately, as I was saying before, there are folks that stop at competency. We don't.
Yeah, right.
Competency is an important filter. The actual kind of do you or do you not care about your colleagues? Do you care about your subordinates? Do you care about your customers? When you're in our office, what you'll find is people are challenged. People are asked to solve what many folks think is unsolvable. People get excited by doing those things. People want to challenge themselves. They want to challenge our business. You know, as we talk to our customer, the customer tells us the challenges that they have. Yeah. We discovered that we needed to engage with repair and maintenance. We acquired in 2015 a repair and maintenance operation. We also believed that it was important to kind of walk the tail of the distribution and get involved with smaller brewers. We acquired Keg Craft for that reason. So our culture is a culture of problem solvers. We are people who enjoy looking at a market and challenges.
So does that mean that as you bring young people in, this is one of the things I've been exploring as far as sort of topical ideas is usually we look in a company for the most seasoned management people to guide decision making for solving problems. And yet young people want to work someplace where they get an opportunity to solve the problems. How have you and in your business there really aren't many people over 50.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you integrate young people into solving problems? Maybe they don't have the experience. How does that work for you?
Again, it gets back to culture. You know, if you're a culture that believes in openness and you believe in respect of your colleagues and the respect of ideas,
yeah.
What you're going to do is look for the best idea, not the best person with the idea. And I think ultimately we always say, look, ideas should be like, gladiators in a Roman Colosseum. They should be, the ideas themselves should be in the arena fighting, not the people. And then ultimately the best idea, regardless of if the person is 21 years old,
mm-hmm.
50 years old, or 70 years old, the best idea is what should win.
That sounds pretty good in theory. How do you make that happen? Because, you know, I mean, what if, you know, your idea might not be the best idea. And as the CEO, you can probably manage that okay.
Mm-hmm.
As the next level below, if, you know, how do you manage that?
You've got to keep people focused on mission. It's like a mm-hmm. sports team.
Yeah.
You want to keep people focused on winning the game. That's what matters. Not whether or not an individual has caught more passes
yeah.
than the next.
Yeah.
It is about the team. And if you create an environment that's focused on team, mm-hmm. you know, that is when people get excited about the right idea.
Yeah. So when you paint the vision for MicroStar, what does that sound like? What does it look like?
It is a high level of communication. It is a group of people who are all challenging each other to be their best. You know, when people come to work in our operation, they have people on the left and people on the right that they are really confident in. They want to be able to measure up. We take our hiring process very, yeah. very seriously.
How many people do you have?
We've got under 100.
Under 100 now. Yeah. So what you're talking about can be done in very small businesses. Now,
yes, it can.
MicroStar is not very small anymore, but you started out that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, now I'm going to ask you one that may be a little – I mean, you're funded by outside investors in many ways, right?
That's right.
So how does that jive? Because people don't perceive – and you don't hear a lot of stories about outside investors saying – Michael, we want you to let the best idea win, even if it is less profitable for the short term. You don't hear that a lot. How do you manage that?
Well, you're going to get me on a capitalism bent because I believe, you know, a lot of folks confuse what capitalism means. You know, capitalism is about thinking about the long term. It's about driving sustainability. It's about engagement with your community. There are folks that bastardize capitalism and think only in the short term. Mm-hmm. Now, that is not capitalism. Capitalism was intended to be sustainable for a long period of time. And when you think that way, you think in a balanced way. You think about doing the right thing, not for today or this quarter or this year. Yeah. You think about doing the right thing generationally.
Yeah.
That's now, the way we're wired.
Well, and I know that's the way you're wired. I don't hear a lot about private equity investors or angel investors or public shareholders thinking that way. And I think that's it's a terrible shame because we end up being pressured to make short-term decisions.
Yeah, I think you'd be surprised. There's an incredible community of people out there. And you know, just like anything else, you look at school teachers, some are good, some are bad. Police officers, some are good, some are bad. Private equity is the same way. I can tell you that the folks that we deal with that provide us our capital are incredible. They are wonderful people. They love the beer business, which is one of the reasons they got into it.
Yeah.
They are always engaging with our customers. They're always engaging with the community.
I went to a party that you had, and I was grateful to be invited, and I did speak with one of your investors. And, you know, it's almost like they feel their investment in your business is almost a reprieve from the rest of their invest. I mean, I think in your case, they do feel like they kind of want to be part of it.
Well, I think they really enjoy it, and the reason is they like people. And, you know, the beer community is about people. That's really simplistically what it centers on. Of course you have to have the most efficient logistics.
Yeah.
And what they provide is access to capital.
Yeah, yeah.
Every business needs capital to grow.
So you've been at a big company. Now you're at a small company that's growing. What advice do you have for somebody who may be in exactly the same situation in a management role at a big company that's thinking about starting a smaller business? What do you think? What would you advise?
I think they need to follow their heart. You know, it's about self-actualization. I think that ultimately the way businesses are set up is once you reach a point where you're very comfortable in a large business, you get comfortable. And the biggest fear is that of failing. And so people often end up staying in a job that's not necessarily making their heart beat because they're safe and they're secure. And I'm a big believer that folks need to just follow their heart, because when you're passionate about something, you think more about it, you work harder, you commit to it, and often that's the genesis of success.
Yeah, I think that's true, and many people have spoken really eloquently, no, none more than you, about that. But, you know, it is – and so if someone's leaving their – is there a way to – transition, or in your case, you just made the hard switch, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen some people who've made a transition from private sectors to starting their business, and what have you seen around that?
Oh, absolutely, and usually it is.
And someone in the beer business.
Absolutely. I mean, there's example after example of folks who were sitting in an office and feeling stale and saying, you know what, I love to do, I love to meet people, and I love to brew beer. And they literally left their jobs to follow that dream. And guess what? In a market where there was zero craft beer, it's a pretty scary thing.
Yeah.
And now they are icons.
Hmm.
You know, these are people that chased a dream and created an industry that's driving over $50 billion into the U.S. economy because they followed their heart.
Well, and I think that's quite inspiring. And at the same time, I think a lot of people have done this. That doesn't mean that the next 20 people can be successful at it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you advise people when they say, hey, Mike, we're thinking about, you know, starting a beer business? What's their checklist for saying this is a good fit for you, or this is not a good fit for you?
I think, first of all, you have got to start with a good group of advisors and a business plan. The one mistake that someone can make is to dive in only because they love it.
Mm-hmm.
They need to love it, and then they need to think about it. And think about the plan and ensure that the economics pencil out. And once you're comfortable that it's something you love and it's something that pencils out, then you dive in. But you don't just dive in because you love it, or, you know what, I'd probably have a dog shelter.
Yeah, well, there you have it. And, you know, the thing that when I think about that, people are often told, whether they're baking cakes or cookies or making beer, you are so good at this. And they're told by their closest to them, you know, you should brew beer, you should sell beer, you know, all this stuff. And but that's not really enough.
Absolutely.
The passion piece is not enough.
There are, you know, brewing beer is like artistry. And there are a lot of starving artists, right?
Yeah.
And the reason is they didn't have a plan. So brewers need the same thing.
Yeah. Well, that's good advice. And I think before we wrap up and we're almost done, is there upside? Is there still openings for more people to get into the business?
Absolutely. I believe that the market is going to continue to grow. You look at wineries, there's 10,000 of them.
There's a lot of room. Well, that's all we have time for today. I hate the end of the show because I love to keep talking to guests like Michael Hronica. Come back next week. Pro Business Colorado.